The details behind the Diddy indictment, Taylor Swift's stalkers, Jerry Lee trying to kill Elvis. Disgraceland dives into the dark side of entertainment every Tuesday. Follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sports Radio 93.7, The Fan, Donnie Chedrick with you until 10:35 tonight. Nightly sports call comes your way then until 11. Charlie Borges is with me behind the glass the rest of the way. Talking a little bit of hockey here. We also had a discussion at the end of the hour on how to say some words. There is currently a debate on how to pronounce often. Is it often or often? You leave that T completely out. Webster's tells us you can say either one, but maybe the guy we have on the hotline can give us his answer on it, as well as some good hockey insight. That man is Jesse Marshall, Penguins reporter from The Athletic. Jesse, before we get started, often or often?
T every time, 100% of the time. Key gang here, okay. Johnny. Yeah.
Okay, because, I mean, I'm always, I don't want to say self-conscious. I mean, I've never really been a fan of my voice, and, you know, enough people either love or hate the accent that I have. So it's not, you know, out of the ordinary that somebody's like, man, the way you say this word just sounds wrong. So I see something like that, and then I'd never really thought about it before. I look it up, and it says they're both acceptable. So I'm going to go ahead and at least say I got a half win on that one, that often is okay. You put the T in there, and you put it in there proudly.
Nobody likes a tie.
Well, yeah, I do have I do have a poll going on Twitter, so we will see, because that'll be the ultimate deciding factor, because only the smartest people alive are on Twitter. But often is out to an early lead. Somebody named Steve says neither. I don't know how he says it then. Anyway, Jesse, let's get into some hockey talk here. The NHL draft was last week. We talked before leading into that draft because the Penguins had a pair of first-round picks. They turned that into a trio of first-round picks, but 11th overall, they went with somebody more on the back end of the first round based on projections with Benjamin Kindle.
Yeah, I think that the intel there too, Donnie, is that the Islanders, who was sandwiched between their picks, I think the intel was that the Islanders were going to take Ben Kindle. I think the Penguins had him top 10 on their board and kind of knew that, well, one, for them, he was probably the best player available on their board. But two, I think they knew that there was no chance, right, that he was going to slip. So they felt confident. Look, I mean, I have a hard time, begrudging them for it, Donnie, because there's no team in the league that got a better look at Ben Kindle vis-a-vis the fact that he was line mates with Tanner Howe, right? Who arguably is one of their, you know, top five best prospects in the system. They spent a lot of time in Calgary, just watching him after that trade was made. That was just after American Thanksgiving. And he joined the Hitmen, which is great because he was playing for a really bad Regina Pats team, immediately slotted in with Ben Kindle and the two of them instantaneously, along with Oliver Tulk, who will be attending Penguins prospect camp. They formed one of the most formidable lines in the Western Hockey League, period, full stop. So they saw enough tape on him to know what they were getting. I think he's an interesting player, Donnie. I think it's tough. People always ask me, what's his NHL comparable or what's his ceiling, right? What could he be? I think a Nick Suzuki, who's a player who's just masterful defensively, and a lot of what he creates offensively comes off the back of his defensive work. That's really the story of Ben Kindle's season. When you look at his size, you know, we'll round up 5'11", 180, right? 175 maybe on a good day. He's not a big guy, and he didn't accomplish his good defensive returns by being physical. It was by being really good with a stick, having a good first couple steps and kind of playing downhill on forwards. I equate it, Donnie, to the way a safety plays, right? Lingering at the top, right? Driving downhill on balls, right? It's the same concept for Ben Kindle at center. I do think he is a center. I think at wing this year, he split time. he took the fourth most draws on Calgary, Don. So it wasn't like he was, you know, out there playing center every single night. But where he struggled on wing is that size piece, right? Like, you got to fight on the wall way more when you're a winger versus a center. And I thought that on the wall, he showcased that lack of size. And it didn't give him the freedom defensively to do that sort of like downhill strike that he does. But make no mistake, one of the most creative players in the draft, hands for days, creative with the puck, you know, going through his legs, dynamic toe dragging. He can chain multiple skills together. His shot is volatile, hard to predict, tucks it well, hides it from goalies. He's got a lot of advanced offensive skills. I think the concern from people is, one, what position is he going to play? And two, can he get bigger? I think the bigger thing, Donnie, is going to happen naturally, right? Just that comes with NHL weight rooms and just organic growth. So I think that's, you know, again, that Suzuki sort of player is what you're molding after here, and you're hoping that the magic that he struck up with Tanner Howe can continue on into the future.
What is his projection to the NHL, and when do you expect that he will be on the Penguins roster?
I think it's a comfortable 3 years for me. One, the size piece, right? I think he's got to get bigger. And then two, I, you know, there's sentiment floating out there, Don, that he's a bad skater. And I don't agree with that at all. I think that's just wrong. He's very fluid, very dynamic. But what he lacks is NHL-level pop, right? That explosiveness off the puck, that explosiveness at top speed. It's not there yet. Again, we're talking about an 18-year-old, right? So very difficult to be too critical of that. Right? I think, again, you get him into a pro NHL-level development camp this fall, they're going to be skating their buns off up there. That's going to help him big time, right? And it's going to come. But those elements are probably what slid him down a lot of people's boards. And it probably is the thing that makes that pass to the NHL just maybe a tad bit longer.
I also don't know why it just hit me now that the Calgary Hitmen named for Bret Hart. Did he own the team?
Yeah, he was. I don't know if he still does. I'd have to double check that, but there was a period of time where he had at least a relative stake in ownership up there, and you know, they have Hitmen nights where they give out glasses and stuff like that.
Always thought he was a little bit overrated. Kind of one of a wrestling hot take.
Execution?
Yeah.
Oh wow.
I mean, the guy was stiff as a board on the microphone.
I don't agree with that either, though. I don't. Was he great? No, but he was no Dean Malenko on the microphone. Come on, like, get a little bit of pizzazz.
Oh, I thought he was kind of a wet blanket.
Oh man.
Jesse, let's get into a little bit of the other two first round picks. Bill and Will, your favorite parts about those two?
I think, you know, just to be transparent with you, Donnie, I think Bill Zahn is probably my favorite player out of his class. I was a big fan of his. I probably had him ranked higher than a lot of other people did. He took it off in November, Don. That's where I became aware of him. He went on a 23-game point streak in November, starting in November, scored a point every game in the month of November. And when you're looking at the draft board, that'll get your attention, you know. And Quebec's not really known for defense. It's kind of like an ultra offensive league that's very loose and very technical. He didn't play that way. He kind of was like the antithesis of what you'd expect from the Quebec Major Junior League, in that he was a wrecking ball. When his coach needed a tangible momentum shift in a game, Donnie, Bill's on and over the boards every time, 100% of the time. And that maybe that momentum shift comes in the form of, you know, Zonin stealing a puck, or, you know, Zonin forechecking somebody into oblivion, a big hit in the neutral zone. You know, he wins a puck race along the boards. It could come in 10, 12 different ways. He's just a utility player. But what he showed this year was a scoring touch that a lot of people didn't think he had. And I think one of the most interesting parts about his offensive game is that his wrist shot is just old-fashioned. It's overpowered. He beat a lot of goalies' gloves this year, Donnie, that were sitting down square to him. Glove up, ready to go. And he just put that puck right past the glove. Like, it overpowered him. And it's just, it's fun to watch. I think people undersell that aspect of his game way too much. I think that his scoring rates are very strong, and they indicate a lot of really positive projection at the NHL level. I think at the ceiling for Bill Zonin, he's your second line wing. A guy that goes out there, you know, I'll say a la Patrick Hornquist. I mean, I can't come up with a better projection. He was a nightmare in front of the net, You watch defensemen. I put this on tape on The Athletic, Donnie, but you watch defensemen swim against him. Right there in front of the net trying to move him, and they're just drowning. They're just fighting for their life down there. And you can see it on the tape. You can see the frustration from them. There's nothing they can do. And then he just comes barreling into the zone at 100 miles an hour. It's just hard to miss him when he's out there. He's constantly forcing defensemen into really uncomfortable positions, and he's uber physical. So you see him barreling in. You see a defenseman cough the puck up. His team's on the attack, and it's just over and over again. He's very relentless. And in the third period, you see him tap a lot of people out. A lot of defensemen just, they don't want to go in that loose puck fight anymore. You can have it, right? So excited about, I think people in Pittsburgh are going to love Bill Zonin. Will Horkoff's the one that, for me, was, I think, a reach. I didn't have Will Horkoff in the first round. I'm at him at 35. And part of that really is being transparent with you, Donnie. The United States National Development Team program this year was sour. There was just something wrong. I mean, they did fine internationally, but at home, they were getting beat up by USHL clubs and NCAA clubs all the time. And after Dan Muse left, it's like something was missing a little bit. And I think that all came to a head this year. So that affected Charlie Trethewey, who the Penguins drafted. He slipped far. Will Horkoff left, right? He got up and packed his stuff up and skipped out of the program. And I don't blame him. There was just something afoul over there. So he only played 18 games at Michigan. And that's really the sample size you're going off of here, is 18 games at Michigan. Youngest player in NCAA D1. This is a project. I want to just, everybody's got to put their patient hat on here. His skills are very raw. They're very unrefined. I think he's got a long way to go with his hands. His hands are very hard. So when passes are coming at him and they're in his feet, you know, the old egg analogy from the Mighty Ducks, right? He doesn't have that yet. He's breaking a lot of eggs. But also, like, Donnie, none of this matters. He's 6'5", 200 plus at 17, and he can skate. So put your chips there, right? These are lottery tickets. Kyle Dubas is in a position to be able to take chances. This is a chance you take. His dad played over 1,000 games. So it's not there yet, right? And I think that next year, as he goes to Michigan organically, like he joined this year in January, or the season was already going on, it's hard to do that, right? So I think this year he's in a much more stable position. He gets the development camp this year. He knows where he's going to be. He knows his role. He can kind of just be himself, right? I think that there's just a lot missing from the tape right now, and it's hard. Again, he's 17, the youngest player in D1 hockey. There's going to be stuff missing, right? I think you just got to have a little bit of patience here. This is the one that, to me, is the longest road to the NHL. But I think, again, if this clicks and it comes together, players this size, they just do not grow on trees, right? They just don't. And it's, you know, he's a physical freak in nature that broke records at the combine. So that's a lottery ticket to me that's worth buying. And you just give it time, and you hope that when it's ready to pop the cork on it, it's all ready to go and settled nicely.
So you think he's probably more like a 4 to 5 year distance
yeah,
away?
Think, yeah, I would say 3 to 4. Yeah. Now, again, if his physical maturity catches up, or excuse me, his skills catch up to his physical maturity, and he can kind of piece all that together, I think you can accelerate that timeline. But like for a frame of reference, Don, he played 18 games at Michigan and carried the puck across the blue line 26 times. That's not a lot. That's not a lot, right? And a lot of those were on the power play. So like that lack of even strength action, it does concern me a little. But again, when you go back to that age thing, you go back to the situation he was in, and I think the lack of development he had in the U.S. program, you know, Dan Muse recruited him and then left. That was the way it worked out. He got the Rangers job as soon as Horkoff signed up. So that everything kind of slid downhill after that. And I think it just has taken him a while to reset his track. So no concern for me, right? I think more just the call out of like, this one's got a little bit while longer, I think, to cook. But again, if he grows into that body and that skill catches up, look out. I think, and again, because he's in college, he's not bound by the transfer agreement. So he could join Wilkes-Barre sooner than some of these other prospects might be able to.
Outside of the first round, a lot of other guys picked. This was a draft that saw more players picked by the Penguins than we have seen in quite some time. Your favorite player that they selected outside of the first round?
This one's easy for me, Don, and I think that the player I'm going to tell you is head and shoulders for me above the rest of the classes. I've kind of been busting into the video over the course of the last couple of days, and I have something on him out on the Substack tomorrow. But Quinn Beauchesne, who they took from the Gulf Storm of the OHL, the 148th pick in the fifth round, he was on a bad team, Guelph was bad. They didn't qualify for the postseason. You know, that obviously took a lot of tape off the board for him. He doesn't have that extra playoff game under him. He's 6 foot, 185, not the biggest guy in the world, not the smallest guy in the world. And he missed the months from a brutal illegal check from behind, really during a prime part of the scouting year that I think slipped him down the boards. But when I put the video out, I think people's jaws would drop a little bit. I think he really reminds me of like a Paul Martin style defenseman, that jack of all trades sort of approach. And the thing I like the most is just how, you know, I think of the Mike Tomlin quote, Donnie, where he says, "I'd rather have to say whoa than sick 'em," right? He is a little bit outlandish. Don't get me wrong. Like I think he knew he was on a bad team and he was probably the second best player on it. So that forced him to kind of have to do things you wouldn't normally see defensemen doing. You know, there's some bad habit culture in there for a guy who's supposed to be defending, but he's just unbelievable with his stick. And he drives, again, downhill on guys, closes his gap really fast, really aggressively. And you look at this tape where he's going up against the best the OHL has to offer night after night, and he's making their lives miserable. Sometimes that's in the form of a physical jarring body check. Sometimes, more often than not, it's in the form of him just closing fast, aggressive skating, active stick, and knocking pucks around. He defended his own blue line extremely well, but then when you add in the fact that he likes to sneak into the play, he scored a lot of goals from down around the goal line, from you know getting that back door on the power play. He's very comfortable with passing the puck out of the zone long distances and is good at it. There's a lot to like here. And I think this is, again, one of those diamond in the rough situations where his situation stunk, right? Like Guelph was a terrible team. He was a minus through the roof as a result. But you look at the tape and it doesn't line up with the stats at all. So I think seeing him in development camp, I think there'll be a lot of people that walk away from camp with Quinn Beauchesne as a point of discussion because his talent level is very evident on the video.
The details behind the Diddy indictment. Taylor Swift's stalkers. Jerry Lee trying to kill Elvis. Disgraceland dives into the dark side of entertainment every Tuesday. Follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, Josie, it's producer Charlie. My question is surrounding the goalies. Gabriel Daigle was the first goalie that Kyle Dubas drafted while as a general manager of the Penguins. Do the Penguins see who they have in the pipeline as the future? Is Daigle the future? Or what is Kyle Dubas' plan in net from here on out? I know they traded away Alex Nedeljkovic, and Tristan Jarry is really the only guy that's locked up for the next couple of years. So are they thinking about outside the organization, or are they going to be patient with the guys that they already have?
I think it's going to be more patience, Charlie. I think the asset that they're looking to protect and nourish here is Sergei Mereshov, right? And you know, I've said this before, the wheels kind of fell off the season end for him last year. He kind of got beat up in the Kelly Cup playoffs for wheeling. But I think he was just tired. He played a ton of games, more than he's ever played in his life, traveling back and forth between West Virginia and Wilkes-Barre, which is just an exciting trip. So, I think he was just beat. I think that was what it came down to. And I think next year it's about giving him the keys to Wilkes-Barre, to that club, and letting him lead that club and be the number one guy night in, night out, and take the lion's share of games. Now, that probably means that maybe Joel Blomqvist is going to be a backup at the NHL level. I don't view that as necessarily a bad thing because I don't know. You know, again, the year wasn't great for him last year either, but I think he's better than the tape that he had, and the circumstances defensively were such that he was just kind of a lamb to the slaughter. But I think that's it. Daigle's good. I think right now he's raw. He overcommits a lot, but this is another guy similar to Beauchesne who was on a really bad team, right, and was getting just thrown to the wolves on a nightly basis. So I say that because when you say the words overcommit and goalie, those two things usually go hand in hand, right? Like goalies that have that issue are obviously usually fighting for their lives in really bad scenarios. So that being said, his technical skill and speed are both sound. I'm being told that a lot of guys think that he went later than he should have because of his circumstance. So I don't think that he's the future. I think that's just another one of those situations where you like the raw skill, you buy the lottery ticket, hopefully he gets out of there and gets traded to a better team, And you know, you watch what happens after that. So, I was actually kind of surprised that they took a goalie. But I think, again, when you look at the situation, the stock for Blomqvist and Marishov dipped a bit at the end of the year, probably enough that Dubas was like, hey, you know, we'll take another chance on a guy here.
Talking to Jesse Marshall, he covers the Penguins for The Athletic. Jesse, you mentioned how the Calgary Hitmen used to have the Bret Hart nights where they would give out the sunglasses. Are the Penguins going to have nights next season where they give out little plastic tanks? Because it seems to be pretty clear what the offseason plan is.
Yeah, I think if it wasn't clear before free agency, right, message delivered after it, where I think, you know, the premier signing so far is Anthony Mantha, who, by the way, like pretty good 2 years ago, didn't really play at all last year, which is why he's got a $2 million bonus for staying healthy in his contract. But if he stays healthy, he's a good player. He's just not the kind of player that's going to impact you in any real true sense of the way. I think it's a nice toy for one of Sidney Crosby or Evgeny Malkin to play with every once in a while. And somebody who's got the hockey IQ to be able to stick with those two and make it work. So I also think, Donnie, that that's probably a player who, if he does have a good season, congratulations, that's a second-round pick you just got in March next year, because he's not sticking around, right? That's a trade asset as far as Dubas is concerned. So, you know, buy low, sell high is the approach here. Look, Gavin McKenna is I've been watching prospects for 17 years. You asked me to rank the good ones. At the top of the list is Sidney Crosby. Pretty tempted to put McKenna above Connor McDavid. Like, what he did at 15 is obscene. You know, he's one of the only exception-level players we've ever seen to score 98 points in 56 games at 15 years old. He scored 126 points last year in 50-some games. Less games he played last than the year before and scored, you know, 40 more points. So this is a really good player. He's generational talent. This isn't one of those things where, like, you hear the word generational. Like, you know, people were tossing that term around, guys, for Alexis Lafreniere, right? That word got used, and it's like, no, this is what the word generational means, you know, right here. So he's that good. And, you know, you look at what's going on around the league, you know, the Sharks, they're not very good either, but their talent is younger. So they've got, you know, Michael Misa might play there this year. We don't know yet. Igor Chernyshov might play there this year. We don't know yet. But Macklin Celebrini is going to get better, right? I think it's kind of a dead heat right now between the Penguins and Sharks in terms of who will have the highest odds for the Gavin McKenna lottery. But even if they lose it, Donnie, here's the thing. The difference between next year's draft and the one that we just watched is there are 7 consolation prizes after McKenna, right? And they're not consolation prizes in the sense of, like, they're going to turn your franchise over on its head and he's going to, you know, you're going to have a guy that's at the level that McKenna is, but they're guys that are really, really good that you can build something around, right? You can't build your whole franchise off them, but they're, like, really quality pieces, and it's just deeper, right? So if you're going to be bad and you're going to stock picks, next year's the year to do it. And then even beyond that, the year after that, you got a generational defenseman in Landon DuPont coming in. Again, using that term appropriately, he was playing this year, 2 years out of his draft year. So there's a lot of really good stock out there. It's like Dubas has pulled this trigger at the perfect time when you look at the pool of talent that's available.
And I just want to make sure I got that right. You said, based on prospects you've seen, that McKenna is right up there with Connor McDavid.
Yeah, it's 1A, 1B. I mean, it, just being honest, it's different than McDavid because McDavid's was based on skating, right? He's so fast, he's so dynamic. But then he had these hands on top of that. For McKenna, I would say it's less speed and more like edge work, cutting ability, pivoting, right? He's like Le'Veon Bellish almost in the way he attacks. And on top of that, if you made the argument to me that his skill set, like his full suite and complement of skills, was better than McDavid's at this same age, I don't have a good counter argument against that. It is one of the most dynamic skill sets I've ever seen. And it's one of those things where you watch him and, like, every night he's doing something you've never seen anyone do before in puck manipulation, you know? Like, these half Michigans behind the net where he's, like, lacrossing it to himself. Stuff between the legs, you know, reverse toe drags, and it's just crazy. So, you know, we'll see. There's a potential he's going to go to Penn State, right? That would be huge. That would be massive, not only for Pennsylvania and state hockey, but you know, just the whole NCAA as a whole. That would change the whole landscape. But he is that good. And you know, this always seems to work out this way, Donnie, right? The Penguins, they go through their cycle. They hit their downswing and the generational talent comes along and the lottery balls tell the rest of the story. But definitely the right time to be in the mix.
They'll get lucky for the third time in roughly 40 years is what you're telling me.
No, no predictions there. I would not dare jinx them. But again, you know, it's just the fruit is ripe. We'll put it that way.
It is Charlie again. Jesse, I have a trivia question for you. It's a two-part answer. So there are two players currently left on the free agent market that have scored 40 or more points last season. Now, knowing you, one is going to be obvious and one may not be obvious. Can you name the two players who are still left available as of right now who scored 40 or more points last season?
Ooh. Charlie, I don't know that I can. 40 or more points. Give me the time frame again. What was the time frame?
Just this past season.
Just last year.
Yep.
Man. I don't know. I'm not drawing any names. Nikolai Ehlers would be one.
That would be right? The obvious one, yes.
Man. It's not Ryan Lindgren, that's obvious.
Do you know about the true crimes that inspired a Bruce Springsteen album? Or the murders AC/DC was blamed for? How about Taylor Swift's violent stalkers? Or the suspicious deaths of Brittany Murphy and River Phoenix? These stories and more are told in the Disgraceland podcast, hosted by me, Jake Brennan, every Tuesday, where I dive deep into subjects from the dark side of music history and entertainment. So follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Yes. Brock got signed. Granlund got signed. Ehlers is the only one I can come up with.
Would you like the second person to have scored 40 yes. points last season that's currently still a free agent?
Hit me with it. Oh, is it? It's not Anthony Beauvillier, is it?
It is not, but he did play for the Penguins last season. Matt Grzelcyk. Is the only other person currently available who scored 40 or more points last season. He had one goal and 39 assists. Is there any chance that the Penguins bring him back? Because apparently he did well.
So here's the thing on him, and this is like a real data dichotomy for me, Charlie, because his returns on the power play, if you look at them from a data perspective, right? And what I mean by returns, I mean how many times he was able to enter the zone successfully with possession, the amount of shots he had on net, how many supporting plays did he make, like passes that led to a scoring chance, right? 90-plus percentile in the NHL. That's great. You look at that and you'd say, hey, maybe we need that. We've got an aging superstar in Chris Letang. You know, Carlson's been up and down. Maybe we trade him. Every other metric, Charlie, every other metric, even strength offensive performance and even strength defensive performance, sub-fifth percentile in the NHL. And it's just so hard for me to say, like, the power play thing makes up for it because you play such a small percentage of your time on the power play, right? Like it's like a 32nd of your total ice time. And it just, the rest of the returns were really bad. So I, you know, given the theme, I don't think it would upset me if they brought him back. I don't think they're looking to be good and qualify for the playoffs, but you know, given where they are, they have some youth, especially now that they've kind of armed themselves to the teeth in this space, that they can put somebody younger in and probably get similar, if not better, results.
Jesse Marshall covers the Penguins and basically knows a lot about hockey for the Athletic. I'm still reacting to the McKenna thing because now I'm thinking of this guy as the next Connor McDavid or close to Sidney Crosby. That was a biggie for me, Jesse.
You got to watch him, Donnie. Pick up those highlight tapes on YouTube, and you'll be blown away by what he's doing. And again, I want to like to frame it, right? Like when you try to project, like this is the magic soup recipe for everyone, is you look at scoring rate, right? We're looking, not we, the analytics community is trying to environmentally contextualize this. They haven't gotten there yet. But you look at scoring rate and age, right? Those two things pushed together, especially for forwards. I don't really trust this formula for defensemen. But for forwards, that's the key, right? Gavin McKenna's broken that chart. He's broken it in half because he's just never seen someone come to the OHL at the age of really 14, right? He was turning 15 at the time, gets granted the exception to play at that age, and then just scores at will. That, like, that doesn't happen ever, right? Like, that never, it does. It happens with guys like Sidney Crosby and Connor McDavid. There's your, like, that's the population you're dealing with here. So, and then he comes back the next year, right, 16 years old, and puts up 100-plus points. In a league, by the way, in the WHL, that's not really known for being high-scoring. Like, I wouldn't say that's, it's known for being a big physical league in the OHL, or in the CHL. And he went in there, and at an age where he's 2-3 years younger than everybody else, just nobody had an answer. So you just don't see this thing every day. And, it's tough to put it into words when you watch him play because he's that far beyond where everybody else is in his class.
Jesse Marshall from The Athletic. Jesse, thanks for taking the time, man. This was great.
Anytime. Talk to you soon.
There we go.
The details behind the Diddy indictment. Taylor Swift's stalkers. Jerry Lee trying to kill Elvis. Disgraceland dives into the dark side of entertainment every Tuesday. Follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.